Back to the program, Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio. With me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. Sheikh Javid, salam alaikum, welcome to the program.
Alaikum salam wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me on this program.
You're welcome. Well, we are going to, talk about the jurisprudential rules of hijab or whatever is related to that, according to Ayatollah Khamenei. And let me start this episode with this question. We all know, Sheikh Javid, that there are some larger institutions than, some familial, for example, circles or small centers such as schools or family, all right? Whenever you are in the society, you take a different role and you are a citizen. And sometimes there are things that are going out of your control. I mean, they are not under your hand.
Yeah.
But as far as the smaller centers are concerned or institutions, such as, for example, schools,
yes,
and you go there either as a student or as a teacher, all right, or as a worker, simple worker in a school, and then you see things which are not appropriate in your eyes, for example, whenever it comes to clothes, for example.
Yes.
All right? So what are the rules and what are the, duties that you have toward those individuals who come to the schools with, for example, inappropriate dress?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Well, when, for example, you see that a girl is wearing, close-fitting dress, or let's say see-through dress, or and she is her hijab or her clothing is not appropriate in according to Islamic standards. So here we are. We have to do our duty or fulfill our duty to forbid that individual or that girl from wearing that kind of dress, because that dress is un-Islamic. It causes other people
provocative.
It is provocative. It is flashy. It is eye-catching, and therefore it is haram. It's it's necessary to remind that girl of her duty to wear proper clothes. And of course, this issue comes within the category of Amr bil Ma'ruf wa Nahi anil Munkar. And I think we discussed this issue in one of the previous episodes. And of course, there are certain stages and certain conditions which must be fulfilled when we enjoin
the good and forbid the evil.
Of course, when enjoining the good, we must take, we must be aware of what is haram and what is halal. And of course, there are certain stages or steps that must be taken. And
yes,
the order among the steps also must be observed. For example, as long as the first stage or the first level is effective, it's not permissible to use the next level or the next stage. For example, there are different levels of oral enjoining, You cannot go to the harsh level as long as this gentle speech or gentle a piece of advice works. And when a soft speech is effective, it is not permissible to use offensive or harsh remarks. And so this is these are some general conditions which I mentioned in regard to enjoining good and forbidding the good and forbidding the evil.
Yes.
The same is the case with the scenario you mentioned. For example, if a student comes to the class without proper clothing, then it's the duty of not only the teacher but also the students to tell her to cover her head and neck, and also wear loose clothes and clothes that are not revealing, not transparent, not see-through, and it's necessary to forbid her from wearing haram type of clothes.
Okay.
And every individual is under the obligation to prevent obscenity from spreading.
Okay. Thank you very much, Sheikh Javid. Let's take a short break and we'll be back. and continue our discussion on hijab.
The followers of Ayatollah Khamenei can refer to leader.ir/en. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khamenei's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Back to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. We are talking about the jurisprudential rules of hijab according to Ayatollah Khamenei with Sheikh Javid. Sheikh Javid, so you said before the break that it is a duty for any individual, in fact, to, participate in the enjoining the good, the act of forbidding the evil, if, for example, a boy or a girl, for example, comes to the school with, without a proper dress, right?
Yes.
But sometimes you see that this is happening, in fact, in a non-Islamic country. So we are talking about lots of Muslims in non-Muslim dominated areas. What can they do? Can they really, in fact, enjoin the good or forbid, for example, those people or prevent them from, such obscenities?
Well, non-Muslims do not wear the hijab. And
yes,
it's not even haram to look at their hair and at their body parts, which they usually do not conceal or cover, So it's not our duty to enjoin them to wear proper clothing. But of course, if there are Muslim sisters, Muslim women,
yes,
who do not observe hijab, and the duty of hijab is still there, and you need to forbid them from obscenity, to prevent the obscenity, and of course to enjoin them and to wear proper Islamic dresses.
I see.
And of course, when it comes, like, for example, men and women getting, mixed.
Yes, this is my next question. If there are certain places,
yes,
such as educational centers, where you see, for example, such as a university, where you know that there is co-ed classes.
Yes.
All right. So if men and women are mixed in those classes, and you know for sure, because you've been there, for example, you've seen or witnessed that some of the women are, mingling with others without any proper, for example, dress system or code. So what is your role? Can you register in those classes?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, there is no objection, according to Supreme Leader Grand Ayatollah Khamenei, to going to educational institutes for acquiring knowledge and teaching. It is absolutely permissible. However, it's incumbent on women and girls to observe hijab. It is equally incumbent on men to avoid looking in haram way and keeping away from mixing with the opposite sex, which mm-hmm. Normally leads to some kind of temptation and corruption, But as long as you are confident and as long as you control your nafs, your lower self, and you are certain that you will not fall into any sin, and you will not look at girls without hijab with lustful intention, and you have no such intention, of course there's no mm-hmm. objection to going to such educational institutes or
yes.
such academic centers.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely permissible, provided that those conditions are fulfilled.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Thank you very much, Sheikh Javid. Thank you, dear listeners, for listening to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio. With me and the rest of the crew, we say wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
رحمن رحيم منان كريم سلام عليم من جاء إلى
Shirin Abu Aqil's death demonstrates the disregard the Zionist regime has for Palestinian lives, how it whitewashes its responsibility for Palestinian deaths, and how its powerful allies shield it from accountability. Please stay with us for an article in this regard written by Maureen Claire Murphy, journalist. This article is published under the heading, "Will ICC Help Israeli Regime Get Away with Shirin Abu Aqil's Murder?" Here's more on the story. If the Zionist regime thought that the international heat over the apparent targeted killing of iconic Palestinian journalist Shirin Abu Aqil would blow over in a couple of weeks, it was very wrong. One can understand, however, why the fake regime of Israel would make such a calculation. It has gotten away with intentionally killing Palestinian journalists, paramedics, and persons with disabilities, with little consequence other than demands for accountability from human rights investigators that have gone ignored by Israel's international accomplices. It has repeatedly attacked Palestinians inside Gaza, where there is no safety from the Zionist regime's bombs in the territory, under economic blockade and comprehensive closure since 2007. All this is on top of the Zionist regime's blatantly illegal settlement enterprise in the West Bank and Golan Heights, and its brutal pacification of any and all forms of resistance against it. On top of that is the Zionist regime's frequent lethal violations of Lebanese and Syrian sovereignty, as well as its international assassinations and global export of weapons and repression technologies. Abu Aqil worked for Al Jazeera, funded by Qatar, and held U.S. citizenship, making her murder an international issue that won't be quickly swept under the rug. Indeed, her shocking death is proving a turning point in multiple ways. She exposed the Zionist regime's lies even after her death, and, in the words of Muhammad al-Kurd, she liberated Al-Quds, however briefly, as the Palestinian people united in outrage and poured into the streets to pay their respects, a mass gathering not seen in years as the Zionist regime violently represses Palestinian public life in the city. And Abu Aqil may yet expose the complicity of the U.S. regime in shoring up the Israeli regime impunity, even as Biden administration officials, some of whom knew her personally, claim to seek accountability for her killing. The Palestinian Authority announced the results of its investigation into Abu Aqil's death recently, saying that the Zionist regime forces deliberately shot and killed her while she was fleeing their fire. The PA's investigation was based on interviews with witnesses, an inspection of the scene, and a forensic medical report, Akram al-Khatib, the PA Attorney General, told the media. The investigation determined that Abu Aqil was hit by a high-velocity armor-piercing 5.56mm bullet fired from a Roger Mini 14 semi-automatic rifle, a U.S.-manufactured weapon. The reporter was wearing a helmet and protective vest marked as press when she was shot in the back of the head. The Zionist regime's military has stonewalled its investigation into Abu Aghla's death by claiming that it needs the bullet that killed her for ballistics testing and blaming the PA for refusing to hand it over. The Zionist regime has, however, failed to disclose the GPS coordinates of all its troops who were present in Jenin refugee camp when Abu Aghla was killed, nor has it published in full the footage from the troops' body cameras that were apparently in operation at the time of her death. An Israeli regime military spokesperson has declined to say when it would release the additional footage from the morning of Abu Aghla's death or describe what it shows, the AP news agency reported recently. AP's reconstruction of events published this week suggests that the Zionist regime fire killed the journalist. Witnesses interviewed by the news agency insisted there were no militants in the area between the reporters and the army, contradicting the Zionist regime's claim that there was an exchange of fire at the time. Benny Gantz, the Zionist regime's war minister, rejected the Palestinian Authority's findings, stating that any claim that the Israeli military intentionally targets journalists or those uninvolved in terror is a crude and blatant lie. Aviv Kochavi, the Zionist regime's military chief, repeated similar claims, saying that no IDF soldier deliberately fired at a journalist. We investigated this. That is the conclusion, and there is no other. Kochavi emphatically did not deny that an Israeli soldier killed her, but he implied that Abu Aghla's death was an operational error in a combat zone, even though there was no exchange of fire between Israeli soldiers and Palestinian fighters at the time, as witnesses and survivors have testified and is shown in video footage of the journalist's final moments. The Zionist regime's president Isaac Herzog dismissed another investigation by CNN as fake facts, while the Zionist regime's military stated that the claim that the shooting was deliberate lacks any foundation. The conclusion of CNN's forensic investigation was more forceful than that of AP, suggesting that the reporter was deliberately targeted. Despite the claims by the Zionist regime's top military and political figures that its army doesn't target journalists, an independent UN Commission of Inquiry found that troops did just that during Gaza's Great March of Return protest. Israeli forces have intentionally shot children. They have intentionally shot people with disabilities. They have intentionally shot journalists, knowing them to be children, people with disabilities, and journalists. Sarah Hussein, one of the three investigators appointed by the UN Human Rights Council, said in 2019. More than 215 Palestinians were killed during those protests, which began in late March 2018 and were suspended in December 2019. Only one Israeli regime troop had been indicted over the use of live fire against unarmed protesters during the Great March of Return as of late 2020. The Zionist regime's killing and maiming of Gaza protesters is a main focus of the International Criminal Court's investigation in Palestine that was launched in March last year. The Palestinian Authority has requested that the tribunal in The Hague also investigate Shirin Abu Aghla's killing. Recently, a coalition of 34 press freedom and human rights groups called for an immediate and independent investigation into Abu Aghla's killing. Failing an independent and impartial investigation by Israel, the groups call on the ICC to determine if this incident amounts to a war crime. Shortly before Abu Aghla's killing, the International Criminal Court received a separate complaint alleging war crimes against journalists by Israeli regime occupation forces. The complaint concerns the systematic targeting of four Palestinian media workers who were killed or maimed by Zionist snipers while covering demonstrations in Gaza, according to International Federation of Journalists. The killing of Abu Aghla was added to that complaint. It was announced recently. The Biden administration says that it does not support an ICC investigation into the killing of Abu Aghla, while insisting that it expects full accountability for those responsible for her killing. Washington has deferred to the Zionist regime's military self-investigation protocol. The U.S. State Department spokesperson Ned Price has pointed to Israel's investigation into a street execution of Iyad Halak, a Palestinian with disabilities and autistic traits, as an example of the Zionist regime's ability to investigate itself. Halak's family, however, characterizes the Israeli regime probe as a cover-up. The young man would record his walk to and from his school for adults with disabilities every day, but his phone was returned to them with its contents deleted. Meanwhile, the Zionist regime claims that all 10 cameras in the area were somehow not working at the time that Halak was shot dead by police as his teacher pleaded for them to stop. The Zionist regime is quick to release footage showing its forces executing Palestinians when it thinks it supports its narrative of events, as it did immediately after Abu Aghla's killing. A video montage published by the fake regime of Israel shortly after Abu Aghla's death suggested that she was killed by a bullet fired by resistance forces. The Zionist regime's made video was swiftly debunked by Israeli human rights group B'Tselem. A field investigation by that group found that it would have been physically impossible for any bullet fired by forces in video distributed by the Zionist regime to have hit Abu Aghla. The Zionist regime also released heavily edited clips of footage from troops' body cameras that morning. If the Zionist regime sits on the fall, unedited body camera footage, it is all but certain because it would prove the guilt of its troops. The Zionist regime has never released the footage of the 2016 shooting death of 16-year-old Mahmoud Shalan, a U.S. citizen, at a West Bank checkpoint where presumably numerous video cameras would be present.
Start. Movement. Speed. Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Islamite. Islamite. Allah my Lord. Allah my Lord. His word Quran. His word Quran. Muhammad Prophet. Muhammad Prophet. Praise be upon. Praise be upon. I am Muslim for all of time.
By the first verse of the Holy Quran,
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Allah will bless you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Protect you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Help you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
So ask His blessings.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
His protection.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
His help.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. With me today at Youth Station, broadcasting from IRIB English Radio Station. Of course, I'm Brother Habib, you know, the good looking guy.
Get to the point. I'm Zainab, he's Habib. This is Youth Station. Thank you for being with us.
Yeah, that's it. Look, we're living the day. You could call
are
it
we living or are we just surviving?
We're living in this life, right? Okay. And the era of technology. For God's sakes, cars are driving by themselves.
Creepy.
We're sending things to space.
They just don't even belong there.
We might even throw our trash in space someday.
See, I think that's a better option. You know, instead of starting...
I think I just figured out pollution.
I know. You just...
Like, why haven't I ever thought about it? Why doesn't anyway? Why don't we just send it anyway? That's how far
trying to find a world that human beings could habitat...
Send the trash to the moon.
Send the trash. Just send the trash over. The trash don't need air. The trash don't need water.
Heck, send it to the sun. It might burn over there.
Perfect. You're a genius and you just cracked the code. You just saved the world.
We only see this on RIB.
Only.
Only.
Only on IRIB English Radio.
Now, sister, going seriously talking here now. We're living in this modern life.
Yeah.
Are you happy with this life? Because me personally, I'm not that much.
Are you not happy with this life or the part where it's modern?
The part where it's modern.
Define. Define modern.
Look, we fell into so much technology.
Uh-huh.
And it made a lot of things easier, true. But there's also the backlashes that we've been having. And one of the most important of the backlashes that I want to state about is the time wasting and there's no difference between day and night.
Wait. The time wasting is totally up to us because we're saving so much time in other areas. The fact that
Why are we saving time in the first place? Why should we be saving time in the first place?
Because we've got more important things to do.
Yeah, like watching TV.
Yeah, that's up to us. We're saving so much time. I mean, we don't have to walk miles and miles to a river to wash our clothes.
To and travel.
To put water in a bucket and walk back and bring it home and then boil it and then put it into another container and then use it when we need and then run out and there's a drought. But today with the plumbing and stuff, there were elephants involved. With the plumbing and stuff, we're saving so much time. You know, and we have access to clean water where in most parts
not
of the world.
Not from the hunk of an elephant.
No, not definitely. No trunks involved. But there was an elephant, definitely.
All right.
But now, you know, the other areas in which we waste time is totally up to us. So I wouldn't waste
modernness. Look, we have to limitize. Look, everything when conditioned, when limitized is good. Like we have this technology, we have this electricity, we have this. I think there should be laws. Like at 9 o'clock, 8 o'clock, turn off the TVs, go to sleep.
What? This is
with the chicken. We sleep with the chicken, we wake with the chicken.
Oh my God, no. I don't want to sleep and wake up with the chicken.
Because you're an owl.
I am a night owl. I am not a morning person. I hate morning people and mornings and people. But this is not North Korea, okay? People are free to choose when to sleep, when to wake up, though...
You are free, but what's better for your body? Most of the illnesses that we are gaining these days, you know, other than the corona, is usually coming from the lack of sleep that we have.
But what does that have anything to do with being modern?
Because the way that we are living in this modern day, it is affecting us. The way that we have to work 10 hours a day...
That should knock you right out when you go to bed.
Exactly. When you work 10 hours a day, you have no time for your children. I mean, seriously, just think about it.
Mm.
There's this also, we're not only talking about this developments that we have. I do believe we have to limit our developments, yes, to some extent. But at the same time, there are also different things that we are living through. You know, nowadays, families have to have two jobs.
Mm.
The different classes, the rich are becoming richer, the poor are becoming more poor.
Yeah.
We're falling into that. There's no such thing as middle class now. The middle class is nothing. The rich are different classes. And now the poor...
At this point, it's like the rich are a different species.
Altogether, anyway. The way that our houses are built, the way that we are, even the plumbing system.
Mm.
I think it could be, much better. The way that we're living in apartments nowadays.
I love apartments.
You are serious.
I do.
You're serious.
I love it.
You know,
so
in 1965,
much.
There was laws. They were thinking about laws and limitations to living in apartments. For God's sakes, they used to put children in cages on the windows.
Yeah, so they could get fresh air.
Fresh air.
I do that with my cat now, though.
Yeah, your cat is unlucky living with you anyway.
I feel that there is perhaps almost... Okay, so there are two types
Expectations are too high.
Yes, that is one of the problems of modernity. It really escalated the level of people's expectations. People have become impatient, you know, because they're used to everything being at their fingertips, right? Whether it's knowledge, whether it's information, whether it's food, books. You can literally order anything online right now. And you have access to an entire universe. It's made people impatient. It has also, I think, affected the way we interact with each other. Because literally right now, I'm talking to Brother Habib and he's playing with his phone.
I'm playing with my phone and paying
on a show. But no, I'm sure he was checking something really important. But the good thing about Brother Habib is that he can multitask. But see, and then there are pros to modernity.
Which is? Like paying my bills right now?
Exactly. You just multitasked. You just saved so much time and hassle. You just probably saved money. You saved paper, most probably. And because at the end of the day, there are two types of modernity, right? There is modern as in living in current times, which is out of everyone's control. We live in the time that we're living, right? And the time we're living, you and I, happens to be a very technology and rapid development sort of atmosphere. There's the other type of modernity where you separate yourself from traditions and old customs. That could sometimes be dangerous if those...
You're changing your lifestyle, your culture to live in something suitable at this time.
Yeah.
That's what it is, and that's more than dangerous. That's losing a religion in some sense.
Exactly. Because sometimes religion goes under the category of tradition and customs, which it shouldn't, right? Religion is a life map. It's a lifestyle, right?
Yes. We're not King Henry.
We're not King Henry.
Who segregated religion from
state.
From state. Anyway.
I think the latter could be more dangerous if it's not carried out and implemented properly. Because, you know, let's not kid ourselves. Some traditions, if they're not rooted in religion, are awful traditions. I don't care where the tradition comes from. I don't care how many years, how deep its roots, what's the history, if it comes from
like
the...
Like Thanksgiving?
The rich, exactly. Halloween? Rich heritage of a nation. It's bogus. It's bupkis baloney, right? And we should get rid of it. Like Thanksgiving. What are you giving thanks to for, like,
usurp? Halloween. There's nothing wrong with Halloween. What's wrong with Halloween?
Everything about Halloween is wrong.
Why?
On a night where people dress as things that they are not, spend whole loads of money.
On candy.
On candy?
Yeah.
And children probably collapse from sugar rush at some point. My point is modernity or being modern, having a modern lifestyle, having inclinations toward being modernized isn't necessarily bad until it gets bad.
Everything is bad until it gets bad.
Some things don't need to get bad. Some things don't get ugly, like remembrance of Allah.
Please send any suggestion, any idea to our email that is englishradio@irib.ir.
Another thing, we talked about it making us impatient. Another thing that it has made us is stressed.
During this life, yes.
Which is strange. You'd think that now that things are easier for us, we'd be less stressed, but we're actually
but
more
they're
stressed.
Actually more stressful. They're getting more expensive. Things are way out of control with the, you know, costs.
I think that's just
everything,
like
that. Everywhere you look, everything you see, something very expensive. It has become very expensive, especially housing. You know, a lot of countries, housing has become a problem.
I think that's just overpopulation, bro.
It doesn't have to do with overpopulations. Governments can fix overpopulation with such ease.
And throwing the trash at the sun.
And then throwing the trash at the sun anyway.
And I think another thing that we owe our stress to is social media.
Exactly. Where you have role models, influencers.
Ugh, I hate that word.
And where you look at them and they are the goal to be. And they're not living that goal. They're faking it.
They're faking it.
They're faking
it. That's what makes it
sad. You feel, and especially those who have insecurities, right?
Mm.
And you're looking at that man with all the muscles, all the, you know, wealth, all the... Yeah, and I'm talking about a specific influencer in my mind. And then you have these girls looking at these women who are, you know, all are made out of plastic.
True.
And they change their concept about what a woman should be and what a man should be. What is a woman? What is a man?
Exactly.
Seriously, you just ask them, what's a man? What's a woman?
Yeah.
Is a woman just a, you know, like a doll? Mm-hmm. Is a man just a person that gets money to the house? What is a man? What is a woman? What is our reality? What are we as humans?
Yeah.
The way we eat. You know the food porn out there.
Mm.
You know, when you there's a difference between you entering a house or entering a life when you haven't seen all that cheesy stuff from Domino's, for example, and you know you haven't seen that salt base, you know, spreading that salt on that meat with, you know, that's making me drool now. So there's a big difference between the, you know, the nafsi, we call it in Arabic. You know, yourself, your self-esteem, your desires, all of them are, they're different when you have seen this and you haven't seen this.
True.
You're open to that, you're not open to that.
Like you said, expectations.
There are some people who know how to control it. There are people who don't know how to control it. And then you stress out when you don't know how to control it. Why? Because you want it. And you're going to do everything you can in your power to get it. And you're not going to get it.
No, you're not.
It's just a dream.
Yeah.
And then when you get it, if you get it, right, you feel so empty inside.
Exactly.
Why? Because it tastes just like that steak that all Mehdi sells.
Another thing that I feel modern life has influenced to a great extent is where and how we define love.
What is love?
Exactly. What is love even? Is love what...
What is love as a song is all right?
I think it is.
Google it real quick.
I mean, as soon as the love I have in my life does not resemble the life, the love that is defined
in my imagination.
Yeah.
Where did your imagination come from? From social media.
Yeah, exactly. From social media or from what the modern worldview is dictating me to think love should be. I feel like, okay, this isn't love. This is toxic. This is not healthy for me. This is embarrassing. This is cringy. I should have seen the red flag. When love is so much more than that, and it needs hard work, and it needs time and patience and resilience. And yeah, it's definitely affected a lot of every aspect of our lives, to be perfectly honest. Do you think this modernness, the state of modernness that we are, is affecting our religion and our religiosity?
Yes.
In what way?
Yes, in various ways. I'm going to start off with marriage.
Huh.
Why? I might be called a stonehead. I might be called a barbaric person. I've been called that in society, actually, sister, and I'm not lying about that.
You Flintstone, you.
I've been called Flintstone. I've been called a caveman before. And the reason why, because I have these beliefs.
Which is that,
for example, a youth shouldn't get married at a young age.
How young is young?
A boy, 15.
A very important question is that, do you think our religion needs to be updated? Our religion and the way we practice it needs to be updated in accordance with modern times?
Currently, no.
Currently, no, or never, no?
The reason why I'm saying currently is because if Sahib al-Asr al-Zaman comes...
He will update a lot of stuff.
He might update a lot of stuff. He might. I'm saying might, and I know what I'm saying. And currently, what we are living in, and personally, we might through the end, you know, might continue this way. That no, our lives have to change for religion, not religion changing for our lives.
Definitely,
Religion is the divine law that Allah Subhanahu wa Taala sent for us to follow for a happy life and a happy hereafter.
But there are so many things in religion that are changing in accordance with the times. Like, one of the kafara for breaking your fast was to free a slave.
That's a different topic.
It's not applicable to our time now. You go ask a marja and you're like, dude, I can't find
a slave.
Here are the other alternatives.
The goal of the kafara, the goal of, you know, making a slave, freeing a slave as a kafara was to get rid of slavery altogether anyway. There are some things that, yes, I am with you. We can only imagine, but we can't, you know, imply. True, during the times of the Imam alayhi salam, their answers and questions would be, you know, especially with the transactions and stuff like that, were at the time.
Mm.
But there are still like general laws that can be changed.
Definitely.
Definitely can be changed. Sometimes the subject changes. This is a transaction.
Yes, that's it.
This is a transaction. Is it haram or halal? We have this law. أحلالله البيع تجارة عن تراضٍ. Right? These laws, these general laws.
Allah has made the lawful
yeah.
trading.
Then you have a riba, for example. You have riba, interest. Mm-hmm. Interest could be, was different from this time or that time.
Exactly.
Right? And so really just, no.
I think, yeah,
don't
you're totally
your
right.
Don't change your beliefs. Don't change your lifestyles for this modern life. Try, especially, this is not for fiqh laws. What we're talking about was fiqh laws. For example, respecting your neighbors. The way we respect our neighbors, the way that we interact with society. Society doesn't change. That, you know, the true nature of
the
society doesn't
essence,
change.
Yeah.
The essence. تَشَابَهَتْ قُلُوبُهُمْ. Their hearts are one. Their hearts are alike. And the way that you have to not be, for example, an angry person. You have to be generous. You have to be kind. You have to
forgiving,
be friendly with your neighbor. Forgiving.
Yeah.
You have to be zine. You have to have that protectiveness. For your wife, for example, protectiveness. And it is part of that protectiveness. Some, for example, this is a perfect example. They see that it is toxic. Thank you guys for joining us on News Station. I hope you guys enjoyed the show. And, you know, be modern in Islam. Be Islamic. Anyway, from now until another show, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I am what I am because you made. I have what I have. My love is strong because you are the one I call creator, my Alpha and Omega, my protector and my maker. Because of you, in weakness I am braver, my defender and my savior, my giver and my taker. Abiding in silence with patience and guidance, aware when I need you, the light when I seek you, justice, forgiveness, the strength in my weakness, and my love.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
A senior Israeli official has traveled to the Saudi capital and met inside the royal palace with a high-ranking Saudi official. According to Israel's Channel 12, the visit was meant to coordinate security cooperation between the two sides, which included the alleged common threats posed by Iran. The visit was linked to the two sides' mutual interest in leveling up their relations. In March, Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman said, Riyadh does not look at Israel as an enemy, but looks to it as a potential ally, saying they have many interests that can pursue together. Riyadh and Tel Aviv have no formal diplomatic relations, although it is widely believed that they do have contacts behind the scenes. There are plenty of examples of this. In 2018, it was reported that the chief of staff of the Israeli army met his Saudi counterpart to discuss terrorism and the alleged threat from Iran. Saudi Arabia's decision to allow Air India flights to and from Tel Aviv to transit through Saudi airspace are tangible signs of a shift. When bin Salman was asked about Israel having a say on a stolen Palestinian land, he said he believes that the Jewish people have a right to a nation-state in at least part of their ancestral homeland. U.S. President Joe Biden is going to travel to the occupied Palestinian territories. Biden administration officials are in talks with the Saudis about arranging a potential in-person meeting between Biden and the Saudi prince for the first time. Meanwhile, Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett's advisor Eyal Hulata is expected to travel to the U.S. next week. Earlier this week, two senior U.S. officials reportedly visited Riyadh as the Biden administration is quietly mediating a Red Sea deal between Saudi Arabia, Israel, and Egypt that involves the transfer of two strategic islands, Tiran and Sanafir, in the Red Sea from Egyptian to Saudi sovereignty with Israeli consent. The deal could also pave the way for the official announcement of the normalization of ties between Riyadh and Tel Aviv. When asked about the report, Saudi Foreign Minister Prince Faisal bin Farhan refused to deny it, only saying more steps needed to be taken to find a solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. In 2020, Israel's then Premier Benjamin Netanyahu visited Riyadh and met with Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. This year saw Washington brokering normalization of relations between the Israeli regime and some Arab states, including United Arab Emirates and Bahrain, Saudi Arabia's key Arab allies in the region. The trend of normalization has been roundly condemned by Palestinians as a brazen betrayal of their cause. Israel and Saudi Arabia have for years been conducting covert talks on diplomatic, security, and business affairs, and now Washington is trying to improve ties with Riyadh. U.S. officials are even seeking to organize a meeting between Biden and the Saudi Crown Prince. This comes against the backdrop of the global energy crisis caused by the war in Ukraine. Russia-Ukraine conflict continues to rock the global energy market. The U.S. is finding itself increasingly reliant on Saudi Arabia, the world's largest crude oil exporter.
A Zionist entity like Israel, I can't really call them a country because they're not. Palestine is the legitimate country. Israel has usurped and stolen the land. So I would caution any nation. I look at what Israel has done to the United States, how they have infiltrated and use the Jewish population in the U.S. to influence our foreign policy in a manner that is no longer favorable to the American people, but instead is favorable to the government of Israel.
Saudi Arabia has refrained from normalizing ties with Israel, unlike Bahrain and UAE, saying it would not do so without a resolution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. But bin Salman calling Tel Aviv a potential ally could indicate that Riyadh has already betrayed the Palestinian cause, and admitting it overtly is only a matter of time.
The U.S. has been shocked by another deadly shooting incident. A gunman has shot dead 19 young children and two adults at an elementary school in the U.S. state of Texas. The carnage happened at a school in the city of Uvalde. The gunman has been identified by law enforcement as 18-year-old Salvador Ramos. The teenager is suspected of shooting his grandmother before the rampage. A U.S. Border Patrol official who was nearby when the shooting began rushed into the school and shot and killed the gunman. The shooter was wearing body armor as he carried out the attack.
I was just devastated. It's heart-rendering for us as grandparents. We have children in the age vicinity that happened here. It's overwhelming.
In a speech from the White House, U.S. President Joe Biden said he was sick and tired of responding to mass shootings as he called for gun control. This is the deadliest U.S. school shooting since the 2012 Sandy Hook shooting in Connecticut, in which 20 children and 6 staff were killed.
Why are you here? If not to solve a problem as existential as this. This isn't inevitable. These kids weren't unlucky. This only happens in this country and nowhere else. Nowhere else do little kids go to school thinking that they might be shot that day.
The bloodshed has revived calls for gun control measures in the U.S. School shootings have become recurring emergencies in the U.S. There have already been 27 school shootings this year alone. 26 school shootings were recorded last year. The massacre at Robb Elementary School happened only 10 days since several people were killed in a racially motivated mass shooting in New York.
So to me, it's really two factors. It's troubled kids, troubled young people, and guns. And every country has troubled young people to some extent, but not every country has a system where you can get guns so easily.
The U.S. has a unique gun culture with the right to possess firearms enshrined in the U.S. Constitution. The United States is the only nation in the world where civilian guns outnumber the people. There are 120 guns for every 100 Americans. No other nation has more civilian guns than people. Americans are estimated to own 393 million of the 857 million civilian guns available, which is around 46% of the world's civilian gun cache. In 2019, the number of U.S. deaths from gun violence was about 4 per 100,000 people.
The Republican Party, the Democratic Party, can't say anything about it because the colonial mode of production, the violence that's required by the colonial mode of production is what keeps, is the lifeblood for the Republican Party and the Democratic Party.
That's 18 times the average rate in other developed countries. Multiple studies show access to guns contributes to higher firearms-related homicide rates. The U.S. recorded the largest number of gun-related suicides in the world every year from 1990 to 2019. And no other developed nation has mass shootings at the same scale or frequency as the U.S. The issue of gun ownership and stricter control on arms has sharply divided the U.S. society.
So, no, there is no irony that the biggest purveyor of colonial violence is also the biggest supplier of guns. That's why they have hundreds of military installations. They, being the United States, has hundreds of military installations around the world. Army, Air Force, Marines, and the Coast Guard, whatever else they have. And even in within the United States borders, the police department, sheriff department, the marshals, all those instruments of violence exist.
The powerful National Rifle Association is a key player here. The NRA Institute for Legislative Action is its lobbying division. Over its history, the organization has influenced legislation, participated in or initiated lawsuits, and endorsed or opposed various candidates at local, state, and federal levels. The U.S. is deeply divided over the issue of gun control, and events like the Uvalde tragedy do not change the entrenched views. However, there is no sign that Democrats will get any closer to passing tighter gun control legislation. Some Republicans are already accusing them of using this latest school shooting to further their own political objectives.
Talks to revive the 2015 Iran deal, known as a Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, remain stalled after a year of intensive diplomacy. Senior diplomats from Iran and the P4+1 group, namely Russia, China, Britain, France, and Germany, have held many rounds of talks in the Austrian capital, Vienna. The diplomatic initiative to restore the deal has become a long and complex saga. Whether negotiators will finally cross the finishing line is anyone's guess. All parties have acknowledged that there are a few remaining gaps that need to be bridged between Washington and Tehran before the deal emerges. But what's keeping the talks from further progress? It has been repeatedly said that Washington's refusal to remove Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps from its terrorism blacklist is the most important sticking point. But Iran's top diplomat has given a vastly different account of what is blocking the path of the negotiations. Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian told the World Economic Forum on Thursday that the issue of the IRGC being on the U.S. blacklist of terrorist groups is a minor issue that has been exaggerated and magnified by the Israeli lobby, and that Iran's top priority is the interests of the nation. He also warned that American interests and foreign policy have been taken hostage by the Israeli regime. Israel has made no secret of its opposition to the 2015 deal and diplomacy with Iran. It has been engaged in a not-so-covert campaign to derail the Vienna negotiations. U.S. President Joe Biden was a vociferous critic of Trump's unilateral withdrawal from the JCPOA in May 2018. During his presidential campaign, he pledged to work to rejoin the agreement. But has he done so? Iran's top diplomat says that has not been the case so far.
The fact that the United States, under the Biden administration, has failed to return to compliance with the agreement shows that the United States is not really interested in a rules-based international order, because one of the most basic pillars of international law by the United States' own agreement are United Nations Security Council resolutions. And again, it's binding.
Amir Abdullahian told the World Economic Forum that Biden's policy towards Iran has not been different from Trump's hostile approach. The Iranian foreign minister said the U.S. president must decide now whether he wants to waste time or courageously return to complying with U.S. commitments under the 2015 deal. His comments come after U.S. Special Envoy for Iran, Robert Malley, said the prospects of a return to the Iran nuclear deal are tenuous at best. Malley made the remarks on the same day that the Biden administration unveiled new sanctions on Iran. The U.S. Special Envoy for Iran noted, however, that Washington still believes it is in the national security interests of the United States to try to salvage the 2015 agreement. The future of the hard-earned international deal remains unclear and could unravel completely if Washington fails to return to its commitments. Meanwhile, Israel is doing its utmost to prevent any deal between Washington and Iran, just as it did before the JCPOA came into existence in 2015.
No group and no block of people has more power and influence in the United States than Jewish leaders in shaping how Americans think and American attitudes. And that's not only true, but it's especially true with regard to Iran. The American media is overwhelmingly very hostile to Iran. And this is in keeping with what Jewish leaders and all those who support Israel really want.
Will the administration of Joe Biden be able to withstand pressure exerted by the Israeli lobby and act based on America's national interests?
The the U.S. has been shocked by another deadly shooting incident. A gunman has shot dead 19 young children and two adults at an elementary school in the U.S. state of Texas. The carnage happened at a school in the city of Uvalde. The gunman has been identified